Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. I'm also Grand Feast coordinator.
That's coming up, isn't it?
Yes. I feel like I just slid into the parking lot here and into my chair just in time because I've been out navigating the commerce that is Thanksgiving shopping everywhere in the county. And I'm feeling fairly triumphant. I didn't forget the turkey. So, you know, everything else after that is gravy.
My wife said that turkeys were surprisingly expensive this year.
Very expensive this year. And I sent my husband actually to pick our turkey up. So he was the one that had the sticker shock. But yeah, there's something glorious in the kind of the frenzy of getting ready to create the big Thanksgiving feast and coordinate all the people. And I kind of like that because it focuses me in on what's coming up. So today's topic is about navigating family holidays. We're going to talk about, you know, how do we step into that minefield that can be family relationships and do the best we can, or actually maybe enjoy ourselves, have a great time, make it a success. And one of the things that we're going to talk about, and we talked about last year, is about going to these events with a social plan. You know, like, don't just show up and expect the worst, right? Or stand in the corner and just, you know, hope that no one talks to you. But quite often, one of the best things we can do when we go into social situations, and not just our family gatherings, but any social situation, is to come in with a social plan, some topics of interest to talk about, some things you can engage other people in, do a little bit of, you know, research about what's going on in the current day's events, go through your Facebook, you know, feed for the latest thing that Bernie Sanders said. So, Hank, I imagine you're someone who doesn't probably make a social plan.
You know me pretty well.
but how could you imagine maybe, you know, having a pocket full of like social tools to pull
that
out?
That does not sound like me at all. I'm more of the go in the corner kind of guy. And in fact, over the years, you know, when I was younger, it was a big gathering. And then as you get older and matured, people die off, people move away and so forth. And now it's just basically my wife and my mother-in-law. And that's kind of my speed, you know. And we don't really need a social plan. We just talk about stuff.
Yeah, you just talk to each other.
Yeah. See them.
Well, it's a good day for you to tune in then, because we're going to talk about those social plans. And we're going to talk about kind of the family units, the family systems. And if you'll, you know, allow me some professor space, I'm actually going to talk a little bit about therapeutic terms in navigating family systems. So put your thinking cap on, or whatever that student mode that you used to get into, because I'm going to try to throw a little schooling at you today when it comes to family relationships. And also, I want to talk about kind of the importance of these traditions that we carry on, and how, you know, rituals and traditions are really fundamental to the mental health and well-being of everyone in the family, but most importantly for children, actually, to have the consistency of these traditions, the way we gather, the way we celebrate important events, is really crucial in how they will carry themselves out into the greater world outside of their family system, outside of their family unit. And so I want to talk a little bit about those traditions that we have, and think a little bit about those traditions that you have in your family, and those that you might have let go over the years because they got to be too burdensome, and maybe how you could create traditions to help build this real solid foundation of identity for your family and for your children, because it really is critical to our mental health and well-being to feel connected to each other through these traditional ritual events that we do, the way we set the table, the food that we have at our meals, the activities that we do. So we're going to talk a little bit about preparing for interactions. We're going to talk about traditions and why they're so important. And I don't know, hopefully we'll talk about how we can make the most of these events and maybe not just survive them, but thrive, to have something we look forward to. Because as I was, you know, running around doing my errands today and picking up different items for our weekend. And of course, it's not just, you know, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. Well, Easter and Thanksgiving are my favorites because of the way we gather as a family, because of the traditions we have. And they're both the most work also. You know, Christmas may seem like a lot of work because of the presents, but that's spread out over a long period of time. But the way we do Thanksgiving and Easter, it's a lot of work in the intense moments with the Easter egg hunt and the meals that we have. And with Thanksgiving, you know, it starts Wednesday night and it doesn't end until Saturday when we kind of all go off and do our own thing. So it's more than just one meal we're planning for and more than one gathering activity. And but my attitude about this is that these two times of the year are when we create those solid bonds between each other as a family, that there's something beautiful about the messiness of trying to coordinate who's going to bring what and making sure no one's feelings are hurt if we don't rave about their side dish, or, you know, making sure that the kids feel like they're special and included and have some sort of task. And to look at the busyness of putting these social events together as part of the joy in showing your love, or maybe the busyness is part of the way we show our love. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be part of the conversation today by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can check out our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, if you like it. Then you can get feed information each week about what's coming up. Our webpage, our website is thereluctanttherapist.com. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And I realize that that's a lot of words to try to put together and get the address right, and I apologize, but I always appreciate hearing from you. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News and Talk tab, and you can also podcast our shows if that's in your technological wheelhouse by going to iTunes and typing in under podcast The Reluctant Therapist, and you can actually hit subscribe and you'll get the shows sent to you automatically to your devices, or you can just listen to ones that you're interested at that time. So there's a lot of ways to participate, and as always, the show doesn't work unless you do participate, because this is a community experience. I just bring the topics, but you bring the filler, the stuff that makes it all kind of come together. So let's talk about family holidays or family traditions or family gatherings, however we want to look at it, whatever this holiday brings for you. And I want to tell you a little bit about this change of thought, maybe not a change of thinking I've had, but a more illuminated piece of thinking that I've had to do over this last year, because I've had a fundamental change in my family relationships over the last year, primarily because of something that happened in my husband's family that brought all of his family into our lives in a really huge and momentous way, all at the same time in the summer. And since then, we've been kind of interacting in ways that we haven't done for years and years. And I had always been aware of the fact that my family system or my family dynamic was very heavy on my parents, my family of origin. I had to throw my therapy terms out at you. And we had kind of, not intentionally, but just the way life had worked out, had very little contact with my husband's side of the family. And so this shift towards having a family member from my husband's side needing family assistance and family attention, and having all this these disparate members of my husband's family, siblings primarily, because there's five of them, and his mother in our life kind of trying to coordinate efforts or not coordinate or communicate and not communicate, basically all of the family dynamics that didn't work out so well when my husband was young kind of came to the surface over the course of the last few months. And so trying to figure out how we fit in that group of people with those family members, watching my husband kind of reconnect with siblings and re-navigate those relationships really has has brought to light for me again this dilemma that people have when it comes to how to be with family members. How do we engage with family? How do we survive get-togethers if we come from family systems or family units that weren't always supportive or comfortable, maybe toxic, maybe dysfunctional? You know, we can throw out a lot of therapeutic terms at families that are challenging. And I think in some ways, this experience might have made me go back towards the, well, if things aren't so great with your family of origin, your family system, it's okay to separate yourself and, you know, not spend as much time or not be as involved. But the contrary actually has happened because over the course of these last few months, I've seen how important navigating these relationships are. If, you know, not that we're going to start spending every holiday together or, you know, start being socially active together, but seeing how important for actually my children and now my grandchild and my extended relationships, that for the health of all those relationships, how important it is for my husband to have healthy relationships on some level with all of his extended family. And also for me as his spouse to try to support those relationships or find my own relationships. And maybe I'm talking in circles, but I fell back a little bit on my education as I've been looking at these family relationships, because it also just so happens that I'm teaching graduate students who are getting licensed to become marriage and family therapists this quarter. And so it was very helpful that we were going over Bowenian therapy, Bowenian family systems therapy. And I'm not going to give you the whole lecture on Bowenian therapy, but the work that Bowen did was really fundamental in how we started approaching family relationships over the last 40, 50 years. And one of the things that Bowen talked about was that the goal for individuals was to differentiate, right? That at some point we differentiate ourselves from our family, our parents, our siblings, and we become our own individual self, being capable of thinking and reflecting our own experiences and not just responding automatically to emotional experiences that we're having in our family or outside in the world. You know, that the goal of strong ego mass or your ego strength was to be able to be in relationship with others without being activated in an anxious way. So that's the goal. The problem is, according to Bowen, that the way our social system is set up, most of us leave home, we leave our family system before we really differentiate from our family. We actually most often leave home when we're still in that adolescent state, right? Those adolescent years where that push me, pull you between parents and children, trying to be an individual and also feeling still connected to the family and the rebellious piece, but also, you know, trying to be the good child. And so that whole push me, pull you of trying to be my own person, but wanting my parents wanting to control everything I do. And then we leave home, whether we go into the military, we go to college, we move off on our own, we tend to leave those family systems before we fully have transferred those relationships from adolescent parent to adult-adult relationships. So according to Bowen, that sets us up to have kind of a lifetime of conflict in those relationships. And a lot of people, you know, throughout the years felt like once they were away from the difficulties in those family situations, they've left them behind, that they never really had to deal with the anxiety of being with parents and siblings, except for, you know, the occasional Christmas and Thanksgiving holidays, and they would just grit their teeth and then go back to their regular life where everything was great. But what Bowen found is that if we haven't corrected those relationships, if we haven't been able to find some sort of peace in those relationships, then we are kind of destined to repeat those same interactions in other intense relationships, our marriages or intense friendships or, you know, maybe in a worker situation, that we would tend to fall back in reacting in that kind of adolescent way whenever we felt triggered, whenever we felt anxious or emotionally distressed. So Bowen said, if you are a Bowenian therapist or you're going in for Bowenian therapy, that really the key to health, the key to well-being, the key to strong families and strong individuals was that we couldn't just move away and separate from unhealthy family dynamics or family interactions. But the real challenge was to figure out how to have grace for those relationships, to have an understanding of the other person and their experience and their feelings and why they were reacting the way they were, to help us lower our own anxiety and to increase our self-awareness, increase our ability to see our own role in interpersonal relationships, and not just react to what we perceive someone is making us feel, right? My mother drives me crazy, and so I always react with anger, or, you know, my aunt always picks at me about something, and so I avoid her at all the parties, you know, and to be able to step back and look and say, why does my mom feel the need to be the way she is? And to start looking at her story or her history or her parents and what her life has been like, and having a little distance from that relationship helps us have better, more adult connections. Was that too wonky? A little too therapeutic? I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I'm curious to know what you're looking forward to or not looking forward to when it comes to your family holidays. Are you dreading that gathering? I mean, a lot of you are probably driving right now. I saw a lot of traffic up and down the coast. We're moving into our family holiday season. So I'm curious to know how this is going to be for you, and how do you deal with those interactions? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation. And also, if you'd like to talk about those traditions that your family has, I'm curious to know what those are like also. 805-781-3875. So does that make sense, Jordan? You know, that talking about kind of the goals of our adult life and how maybe going back into those kind of triggering, uncomfortable family gatherings is a way that we can actually be healthier and stronger in our life away from our family.
It makes sense, I think, if you're putting it into practice, right? Like, I mean, oftentimes, well, when I was in college, at least, and at sometimes when I go home to visit my family still, I feel like the 16-year-old version of myself. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel like I'm lazier and
Waiting for mom to do things.
Just things that are just horrible that I thought were just out of my, you know, repertoire of things that I do on a regular basis. But, no, I'm really not that bad. But when sometimes you feel like you're regressing to certain things. So I could imagine that that sort of tension could come up again, but
absolutely,
you can learn from it.
And of course, that's what, you know, Bowen talked about, was that if we have left home before we've, you know, transferred that those relationships or refigured those relationships into more adult relationships, we are going to always regress back. And it's an interesting thing in my own, that I noticed my own family dynamic, is that my brother and I had a really conflicted sibling relationship. I mean, just really difficult all of our childhood, just at war with each other pretty much all the way through high school. And then I went off to college. And what saved us, and what changed everything for us, is that he ended up going to college at the same place I did. We both ended up at UCSB. And so at school, we developed a completely different relationship that was separate from our relationship we had in the house. And that really changed the nature of our whole adult experience. You know, now he's probably one of my best friends on the planet. And it's because we had that opportunity to make a relationship outside of home. And I'm curious to know what people think of this idea of going back home and trying to reframe the experience you have in your family system instead of just always going back guarded, you know, ready for the conflict with siblings or the fight with your father or the, you know, tension with your mother or the dreaded conversation with your grandmother. I mean, all those things, we kind of go back wearing these suits of armors, right? That we somehow, if we can just get through it, we'll get back to our regular life. But how powerful would it be if you change that stance from going into family situations without that suit of armor, without being prepared for war, and actually came in a little open and vulnerable, came in wanting to find different ways to interact with those in your family group. And I talked about coming in with a social plan. You know, if you know those triggers, if you know those things that people say that are going to make you get upset or make you react in certain ways, then find different ways to interact. you know, bring up different conversations. If there's always a fight about politics and religion, then come in with a little research about something else that might be interesting. Maybe your uncle's, you know, a war buff. Do a little work and study those wars that he's interested in and start that conversation. But I think one of the biggest mistakes we make is that we just dread this experience so much that we go back and we reenact the exact same dreaded experience over and over again, instead of actually taking steps to change the course of those interactions, to change the way that we respond. And again, to go back to Bowen's work, a lot of this change in the family relationship is only possible if we work to lower our own anxiety. He says, you know, so much of the way we respond to each other is an effort to reduce our own sense of anxiety in the situation. So we tend to either get really submissive and ignore what's happening, or we get really defensive and react and attack. And if we can notice that we're feeling anxious and take a few breaths and realize, oh, I'm feeling anxious and therefore I want to run or I want to attack, and to be able to be aware of that so that you don't just react, but you can actually start looking at your own part in the interpersonal process. Because unfortunately or fortunately, you know, there's really never a time that one person just is the bad person. You know, as much as we look at unhealthy relationships and say, I can't be around that person, they just trigger these things in me and it's not healthy for me, and I understand that. But to understand what are the things we can do to change ourselves to make that interaction more palatable, or maybe even enjoyable, instead of always hoping that the people in our life are going to change. Because that's how we get stuck, right? That definition of insanity where we keep flying into the glass door, hoping that one time the glass door will be open, and it just continues fueling that sense of sadness and anxiety. But to be able to recognize, you know, I can't continue interacting with this person in the same way, and I'm not going to be able to change them. For whatever reason, they are who they are. So all I can change is the way I interact with them, the way I respond, or the way that I allow myself to react when I'm with them.
Elizabeth, I was just thinking about how, you know, when you have to think of the circumstances of everything. And, you know, when you're going home for the holidays, mm-hmm. oftentimes it is probably the second time or third time you've seen these people all year, especially if it's not just immediate family, if it's aunts and uncles.
Oh, yeah, the big extended like family,
yeah.
Yes.
And understanding that, you know, the anxieties that you're all feeling in sometimes uncomfortable circumstances is playing out there. And this is only one isolated moment out of a whole year. Or something, you know. And so when you reflect on Thanksgiving's past or other holidays past, you're thinking, oh, well, I remember what they said last year. But that was, you know, one day out of the year, and like not giving as much power to it is probably huge.
And it is interesting because, you know, we tend to carry those comments made by family and those that we are emotionally attached to, right, with much greater weight than something a stranger or, you know, a friend might say. And that kind of goes back to some of the other things that Bowen talked about, is that, you know, as much as individuals we hate to accept it or admit it or realize, is that we actually are much more dependent and reactive to one another than we think we are. That we think that we get to adulthood, we think we get to a certain age where, you know, we aren't going to be dependent on other people, that we are our own person, that we have our own thoughts, our own feelings. But he said, in reality, you know, we are social beings and we are dependent on each other throughout our entire lives. And whether we make that family system with our actual relatives, or we make that family system with friends, we all need some sort of system. And when you are dependent upon others for your emotional well-being, which is healthy, you are more sensitized to how they are with you, right? That our well-being and safety is kind of wrapped up in them. So it's easy to be triggered or reactive. So the only way, again, to try to make these situations more fun, more healthy, to actually be something we look forward to, is to, again, change how we view and perceive those people we're related to. Because we continue, like you said, go back and replay that story of who our aunt is or who our cousin is, you know, every year, because we only see each other two or three times a year. And so that story can take over any sort of reality at some point. And to be able to realize that we can change the story of our relationships with our family at any time. And the other thing that Bowen said is it's really important to have some sort of relationship with as many people in your extended family as possible, because we are interconnected with all of these people in our extended family in really kind of mysterious ways, that you might find that there's an aunt or an uncle that has a really similar interest as you do, because our behaviors and our interests and our values are kind of passed down generation to generation. And it may not be from our mother to us. It might be from a grandmother to us or an aunt to us or a cousin to us. And so to be curious about that extended family group, to not just write everybody off as, oh, that strange second cousin I kind of only see once in a while, but to take some time to kind of find relationships with different members in that greater family landscape. Because one of the important things about growing and developing connections with others is to realize that we have to kind of diffuse our psychic energy. That when we have all of our psychic energy focused on one or two or three key people in our lives, that's a lot of pressure on those relationships to be all things to us, right? To be our support system, to be our cheerleaders, to give us good feedback. I mean, it's a lot of pressure on mothers in particular to always say the right thing every time our children need some sort of feedback from us. And how important it is, you know, I'm so thankful for my sisters and my brother and my parents, because my daughters have other people in the extended family to get positive feedback from or to have relationships with, because it's, you can't have just one or two people be the carrier of all of your emotional well-being. And so how important it is to help our children have some sort of relationship with all of our extended family members, because out there, there are people that are going to be a good, healthy connection. 805-781-3875. You know, maybe I'm too esoteric today trying to talk about healing these family relationships from a therapeutic standpoint, but I want to know what you think about this. I mean, are you looking forward to your family holidays? What is it about it that you do look forward to? Or what is it that you dread? Are you the consistent avoider? Some people just hide out in the kitchen, and if they cook the whole time, that kind of keeps them away from having to interact with everyone. But if you believe that differentiation, right, that ability to actually fully mature into our adult selves, that hope that we will fully differentiate, have a sense of who we are separate from those in our lives, understand our own thinking and feeling processes without, you know, being triggered by every time someone says something negative to us. I mean, if you do believe that that is kind of our goal as humans on the planet, then part of that differentiation includes developing personal relationships with everyone in your extended family in some way. Having that powerful connection will help you develop your own understanding of who you are. And also, when we have this strong sense of connection with others, we see ourselves as different. We start to see the ways that we're like those in our family, but we also get to appreciate the ways that we're different. And maybe it helps us to appreciate ways that we might have seen our family as being whole, fun people that we didn't realize before. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about those holiday events, going home for the holidays, having the holidays come home to you. How do you choose to celebrate them? I came in today talking about kind of running around, gathering all of the goodies for the weekend and all the food that we need, and getting everything ready to pack up in the car, and how exciting it is. And, you know, a lot of times people say, gosh, why do you work so hard? You know, why are you putting so much pressure on yourself? It should be fun. You know, shouldn't get overburdened by the holidays. But I do think that there is something, for me at least, that helps me get focused into this time of year when I have a lot of things I have to get organized and really focused and think about. What are things in my family that they like to eat? You know, what are special things we have that make people feel welcome? What are things that the kids can do so they feel included? All of that kind of helps me. The busy work of getting set up helps me focus on how to get ready. And then it reminds me that part of the whole holiday season is creating these family ties, these family traditions that help build a really strong foundation for mental health and well-being for our children. Family traditions help us to feel like we belong to something greater than ourselves. And it's really important in times of tragedy or times of strife to have family traditions to help the young people in the family understand that life will go on. You know, maybe there was a death in your family this year, maybe a grandparent passed away or someone else in the family. And it's so important to take the time to gather, to still have the family meal together or to go on the family hike or play the family football game or Monopoly game or whatever those things you do as a family, that traditional thing your kids look forward to. It's important to continue those traditional gatherings so that the children have a strong sense that even though terrible things happen, trauma happens, grief is experienced in our lives, we still have the consistency of these gatherings to help us make it through difficult times. And again, what I think I find so interesting is that even in the most stressful of family systems, and I experienced that, you know, this summer and fall with my husband's extended family, even in the most stressful and strained family systems, when there was a crisis in this family, everyone found some way to come together and do as best they could with their emotional skills and their emotional landscape. And I think that's what really got me thinking about how important it is to talk about healing, maybe not healing, but coming to some sort of peace with our extended family relations, because at certain times in our life, they are going to be the place where we have to go for help and support, or we're going to be called in for help and support. 805-781-3875. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. This is Public Radio KCBX. And Patty, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I did come from a family where we were close and we loved each other, but the behaviors weren't always helpful. And there was a lot of competition in the family, which could turn into criticism and tears and all kinds of bad things. But I moved away, and it helped me to grow up. But I continued going back a couple times every year, and it was difficult. But I discovered that it was very, very important to my daughter, and I think you mentioned that, Elizabeth, that it's worth the effort for the children to be part of a big family. And she loved going back and staying with my family, even though it was stressful for me. But one of the best things we did to make it less stressful for everybody, we had a couple of adult friends who didn't have their own children. And when they came and joined holidays with us, everybody behaved better and was less stressed out. So sometimes just bringing in an extra person puts everybody on their best behavior, and the competition in sniping isn't as intense.
Well, and you bring up two great points, Patty. I love the idea, you know, Bowen would call it triangulating the family, where, you know, if the family's having a hard time dealing with their own conflicts, you bring in an outside person, makes a triangle, and all the pressure is on the third, you know, the other person in the family doesn't have to deal with each other. They can all focus on the guest, which is a great tool. But also, yes, I think that, you know, we're carrying on these family relationships because our children do need to feel connected to something greater than ourselves. And I've always marveled at how neither one of my daughters react at all to my parents. You know, if they're doing things that would drive me crazy or always kind of triggered me or made me upset. And I'm looking over at my daughters for their response, and they're just loving their grandparents. And so there's that beautiful separation between the generations, you know, that make us appreciate that we are supposed to have different types of relationship with different people in our family systems. And did you notice that as you got older, did your relationships with your siblings change?
It wasn't so much the siblings as it was the parents, really. Mm-hmm. My brother and I had competition, but it was always not personal. You know, we just would play games, and it was just a game. But it was more personal with my parents. For some reason, they competed with their children. Mm. My father competed with my brother, and my mother competed with me, and it was a complicated family. There were just four of us, and as I said, we were close. But I would not say that it really, really got better until I got pretty old. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it might have gotten a little better earlier had I not moved away, but the fact that I moved away created problems in itself, not for me, but for them. So it took a long time for the tensions to ease, and now they're completely eased, but it didn't happen overnight.
Well, and I appreciate that, the recognizing how moving away made it in some ways more difficult, because since I'm talking about Bowenian therapy, he would say that, you know, we have to kind of keep going back and reworking those relationships on a consistent basis in order to heal them, that they don't just fix themselves. And not having that, you know, going back into the situation, it makes it harder to find a sense of healing unless we...
Well, I will say that my experience supports that, because my father got sick with Alzheimer's, and I moved back there for 3 years and you know, just took a big dive right back into the soup.
Yes.
And that's when things really did get better. It was difficult, but actually that was when the real healing occurred, was when I stopped running away from it. So that supports exactly what you're saying.
Thank you, Patty, for taking time to call, and I hope you have a happy holiday.
Oh, thank you. I know I will.
Thanks for calling in. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And I brought up the topic of navigating our family holidays. And I mentioned that, you know, you can make things different in your life every day by changing the story that drives your life. That belief system that drives the reactions or the behaviors that we take on, because no one can ever make us feel or respond in any sort of way. We always have a choice in how we're going to respond. And quite often what's difficult with families, as I mentioned earlier, is that we leave our family homes in the middle of kind of that heightened time of reactivity of adolescence and the tail end of adolescence, where we really are in that struggle for power with our parents, or in that struggle for independence from our family, or, you know, feeling that need to burst out into the world and be our own person. But because of the way our culture is set up, we don't often go back and heal those family relationships by developing adult-to-adult relationships. We kind of get stuck in that pattern of adult-child relationships and the tension that comes with that. And for a lot of us also, we continue to look to our parents to be that place of support or compassion or understanding. And we keep hoping that they're going to be someone for us later that they couldn't be when we were young. And that kind of lifelong quest or hope that our parents are going to be different than they've been our whole life sets us up for having really uncomfortable family gatherings, that we go back every year hoping that things will be different, not changing the way we behave, and then being disappointed when things don't change. So I'm encouraging you to come up with some sort of social plan. You know, don't just show up like you're on the firing line or with your suit of armor on, but show up with some sort of way to do things differently. You know, if you always are in conflict with your, you know, Aunt Sue because you both want to bring some sort of cranberry casserole, then be the person that lets it go this year. You know, bring a different dish. Let Aunt Sue shine. Because part of that goal of differentiation, and Bowen talked about differentiation taking a lifetime, that we really don't necessarily differentiate when we're 25 or 30 or when we get married. There really isn't a time or a date that we become our own individual self, that it's actually a process that we get better at throughout our lives. And if we're lucky enough to live a long life, then we have the opportunity to differentiate in greater ways. And I think now that I get to sit in the chair at grandmotherhood, I can see that great beauty of being the grandmother position in the family. One, because people listen to you a little differently in your family, but also because you've been around long enough to have grace for everyone around you, right? That I can now be in this place where my grandchild can come to me when her parents are driving her nuts, and hopefully I get to hold the family in a little more kind and loving way without feeling like I need to get my personal needs met by everyone in the family system. I don't know. What do you think about that? Am I the only one who thinks about these family gatherings and these family activities? I find that hard to believe. And I know with everyone, you know, driving madly up and down the coast, that this has got to be the conversation we're having. You know, make sure your grandma doesn't get an extra drink at dinner, or make sure that you don't talk about me losing my job. You know, all the negotiations we have with our spouse. I don't know. I think that those are important things to look at. 805-781-3875.
And Elizabeth, one thing I'm thinking about during this conversation right now is that my sister and I were talking the other day, and we were talking about getting ready for like the holidays, and instead of like being super worried about certain things, we started reflecting back on my dad's sister, one of my dad's sisters, his oldest sister, and she's the world's greatest listener, or at least the greatest listener I've ever encountered, and she is very consistent. She's always like that, and I appreciate it more now than ever. She's excellent at it. She actually listens to people, and that is not something that happens often. People don't really listen. They listen to create their next answers. Mm-hmm. And with her, she's not. So I think that's certainly one thing I want to start doing during holidays, just getting better at it, because I would like to be like her when I grow up.
Well, and what a great point too, because if we're talking about coming into our holidays with a social plan, trying to change the way we respond to people in our family and changing the way we interact with them, you know, what a great opportunity to ask questions of people in our family that we tend to avoid because we've had conflictual conversations before. Instead of avoiding those people, try to find new ways to be with them. Because I guess, you know, part of the reason I got so inspired by this show, one, because it's the time of the year. Two, it's because of what's going on with my in-laws and with my brother-in-law and the change in that family dynamics. And I started really thinking about, you know, what is our social contract with our family? You know, they may not be in our day-to-day. We may not be living next door or having meals all the time, but I really feel like there is some social contract that we have with our family, with those who are blood relations, and that it's part of our responsibilities as humans to develop some sort of network with those extended family members, because without that social contract, that promise to look out for each other in, you know, bad times and in good, and to, you know, love each other in spite of our flaws, we end up having broken family systems, which means a lot of people end up being wards of the state or wards of the court or housed in nursing home facilities without anyone to look after them. And I think that's why this has come so to the forefront for me at this time, because I'm seeing that, you know, it's easy to love people when they are being their best, right? It's easy to love your aunt when she's a great listener. It's easy to love your parents when they're supporting you and agreeing with everything you say. It's easy to love your siblings when they're fun and easygoing and make you laugh. But real love, right? The real love of family is when we love each other when we're not on our best behavior, when things aren't going well for us, when we've made choices or decisions that get us into a place where we're in trouble and we need help. You know, if those are the times where we really see what family love is about, because without that family love and that social contract that in spite of your bad behavior, I love you because we share this commonality of blood and relations, we will end up having more and more people isolated and on the street and trying to fend for themselves. What do you think about that? 805-781-3875. Julie, what's on your mind? Hi, Julie, are you still there? Well, Jordan will check and see where Julie is. Oh, give us a call back. There she is, 781-3875. But when I'm talking about this social contract, you know, I think that there is this moral obligation that we have to those people who we're related to. And it doesn't mean that we have to take them into our home necessarily, or that we're going to spend our savings trying to keep someone out of debt. You know, there's a lot of social contracts we have with ourselves also to try to be self-reliant, to try to make great decisions, to try not to be a burden on our family members, you know, to not expect that we're going to get unconditional love and acceptance for everything we do, no matter what it is, because we're family. You know, I think that social contract goes both ways. That there's part of us as individuals, part of that differentiation, part of that maturing piece that requires us to take responsibility for our behaviors, to try to be someone who can make a family proud. You know, we talk a lot about just accepting people as they are and not having expectations in ways I think that's unrealistic, because we live in a social environment where we all are interconnected in some way. We're all dependent on each other in some way. And so we all are responsible in some way for behaving in a responsible manner, being able to contribute in some way, whatever that is, being able to find some way to participate. And then on the same hand, the other hand, we have a social responsibility to others in our lives, to help them out when we have time to help them, or when we have the ability to help, or when we have the resources that they might need. Because without that social contract to looking out for each other, the whole social system kind of breaks down. And we've seen that increase in reliance on the social systems over the last 50 years with the increase of social programs and the increase of use of nursing facilities and the increase of food stamps and a lot of these safety nets. And the more that we moved away from reliance on family support, the greater reliance we've had on social programs. And I don't know if that's been for the betterment of society as a whole, because it's allowed us to walk away from a lot of sticky and uncomfortable family situations. So you're waving a card at me, Jordan. What was that?
Yeah. Well, one of the callers wanted to know if they can find the same connections with family as they can with friends.
So if they don't have family, then can you have that same sort of social contract with friends?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. So I, you know, not every, well, it's interesting. Two points come to mind. I was thinking about, you know, forever and ever, families were very large, right? People had multitudes of children, and for a few reasons, for religious reasons, because we didn't have birth control that was available, but also because you needed a lot of children to help take care of the family farm, and you needed a lot of children to help care for the parents, and a lot of children didn't live out of childhood. They died young. So we had much larger families to draw from, much larger family systems to draw from, which kind of goes back to what Bowen was saying, how important it is to have relationships with many people, every person in your extended family, to kind of diffuse that psychic energy that we put into our relationships. And so I think, you know, we can develop very strong, intense relationships with our friends that can have a familial nature to them, but you have to have almost a more pronounced sort of social contract with each other, where you actually will say, I will look out for you when you're sick, or I will, you know, those things that kind of go unspoken in family systems, you would have to kind of spell them out and develop those social ties. And there's been a lot of research that says that people who are childless by choice actually do create just as strong familial type bonds with their social community, but they're much more intentional, as opposed to, you know, family that we don't get to choose, and we, you know, just hope that they're going to be there when we need them. I don't know if that answers that question.
I hope so.
and what was the other question?
Another caller said that they've tried repeatedly to repair family relationships, but the family isn't interested.
Mm. Well, I wish they had stayed on the line. That makes me sad, because that's a really difficult situation. That what do we do when we so want to heal those family relationships and yet the family is resistant or unable to? And it's interesting, because it kind of ties back to this experience that I've been having with my in-laws, my extended family on that side, for the last few months, that there's a desire, I think, for the family to be connected, but the tools for how to do that were never really taught. Or, you know, and again, the older I get, the more grace I have for my parents and my grandparents and those who came before me, because we can only give to our children those tools with which we were raised with, right? We can only pass along the wisdom that we actually have. And so if we weren't raised with communication skills, if we weren't raised in a family that gave us the resilience or the coping skills to deal with difficult relationships, if we weren't raised with the socioeconomic advantages of education or finances to help out, that it's very difficult for parents to pass along more than they have. It's impossible. And so in some family dynamics, you know, the parents may not have been capable from their own childhood to pass on to their children the ability to have forgiveness for each other. Maybe these parents never really reconciled their relationships with their family, their extended family. And so they have a difficult time passing those tools on to their children. And so if you're in a family system that you feel like you would like to connect with or have tried repeatedly to be connected with, the only thing I can say is to keep looking out to those extended family members, that it might, maybe you have to widen your net, widen your search. Again, it goes back to that idea of trying to put so much psychic energy into only a couple relationships is a lot of pressure on those relationships to be all things to us, that it really helps to try to make relationships with those in our extended family system. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago when we interviewed my cousin Carol, who's my second cousin, and she lives in Nepal. And we were very close growing up, and then we went off and lived our adult lives after college and kind of lost touch. And then have reconnected over this last year. And that relationship with someone who, you know, a second cousin in a lot of ways I may never see again had we not made a conscious effort to reconnect, that's been one of the most important relationships of my life in the last year. It's been life-changing to connect with her. So I encourage anyone with those challenging family relationships to go deeper into the bullpen of those extended family relationships. 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be part of the conversation by calling in. I know some people like to leave their questions with Jordan, which is great. But we'd like to talk to you also so I can get more information. 805-781-3875. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Check out our Facebook page. You can podcast previous shows. We're in iTunes now. And I keep saying, Jordan, that all you have to do is go into iTunes and hit subscribe. It is that easy, right? And then it sends the podcast to your...
Yeah. So if you have like a podcasting device, an app, you should be able to subscribe really easily. And you can do that through the iTunes store also.
Good, right? And I like that those things are sometimes self-explanatory. And not only was I talking about navigating those challenging family holidays, but I brought up the idea of traditions and how important traditions are in helping our children remain to develop this real strong sense of connection and foundation with their family. Because as our children grow, you know, they need to have strong relationships with extended family members, because they're not going to always be able to have easy relationships with us, their parents. As much as we'd like to be their primary go-to person, you know, our children may need to talk to someone else, grandparents, aunts, uncles, about things that they can't come to you with. And so these traditional gatherings are a really important time for our children to connect with their extended family. So I'm curious to know, what are those traditions that you've created that you look forward to? 805-781-3875. Kelly, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. I am looking forward to the holidays and being with family. And I'm sort of coming with the conversation late, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on kind of my family dynamic, which is that growing up, we always had this really, really solid family unit, especially around the holidays. I have a big side of the family on my mom's side. And in recent years, after the passing of my dad, my mom remarried. And everything that we've known our whole lives, you know, 20, 30 years, myself and my siblings, has really changed. And I think that some of us really embrace the, you know, addition of the family, different traditions. My mom's new husband is very different from my father. But some family members are just, really, really resistant, and it creates so much tension around the holidays that just never was there before. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's a really, really difficult thing to watch, especially since I normally associate the holidays with such happy memories. And now it's kind of a source of tension,
yeah,
unfortunately.
No, and Kelly, and you bring up something that is really important, because our families do change over time, where the death and loss or divorce and remarriage, or, you know, yeah, losing grandparents or losing your father. And the challenge to the family is threefold. One is grieving, that we all take a different amounts of time in our grieving process. For some people, it can be, you know, a couple years. For other people, it can take 5-10 years to be able to, you know, grieve and move on and accept that things are different. So having grace for each other's length of time needed to grieve is important. Number two is, if for some family members, you know, they might feel like that loss of the traditions that were there with the family before your father passed away, they miss those, and it might be important to try to integrate some of the old family traditions in the new family system, you know, and to still keep those traditional things happening. Because as I mentioned before, it's so important for children and for adult children to feel the continuity of those traditions, to know that life can carry on in some way, even if that person isn't there. So to maybe make a conscious effort to honor your father at your family gatherings, so that his presence is still felt, so that the family members that are struggling still with grief and change can feel that presence of your father and feel those old traditions and feel that those things have still connected you. And finally, to find new tradition with your mother's new husband, and to kind of introduce those slowly, to start building new ways to incorporate this new family system. And those three things, I think, might help. But mostly it's to give each other grace and time and space with what's happening in their lives. So I hope those things help. But I really do think the most important thing is to try to make sure that you're honoring your father's memory for all members of the family, so that those traditions carry on. And I wish you a happy Thanksgiving, my friend. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is The Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And Marcia, you get the last word today. What's on your mind?
Well, that's great to hear. I was listening about how sometimes family members can be difficult, or there isn't that connection. And I'm a certified laughter coach, and I was invited to do a session at the morning before a wedding where people had not spoken for a very long time. And here they are at a wedding. And we always say laughter is the shortest distance between two hearts. Mm. And sure enough, we got them laughing. We laughed for no reason. And they had eye contact, they interacted physically together, and it broke down some barriers. And so the rest of the weekend, they're like high-fiving one another, and it was just wonderful. So I encourage people to laugh more and laugh together. And they can even laugh tonight where I'm leading a free class, or Saturday where I'm leading a free class.
And is that information available to anyone who wants to show up?
Sure. They can either go to our website, which is laughterinslow.com, or tonight at 5:30, they can come to 5-7-8 Marsh Street, which is right across from Couch Potato, and there's free parking in the back. Or on Saturday, this is going to be great for families after Thanksgiving, at 11 o'clock in Arroyo Grande at Firefly Haven. And that's, okay, I think, 1135
West Grand.
1155 East Grand.
East Grand, okay. Thank you, Marcia. I think that's a great idea and thanks for calling in. I think that's a great reminder that it is the laughter that really kind of brings the families together, that it's the things that don't go well during family gatherings, that the things we laugh hardest about years later, you know, to not get too tied up around having the meal be perfect and the food taste perfect and, you know, the decorations be perfect, because when things don't go perfectly, that's the stuff that you remember and that you can laugh about years later. And to take time telling stories at the family dinner table, you know, funny things that happened when everyone was young, to kind of continue building those bonds and to kind of share those laughs and those memories, to tell stories about people who have passed away and are no longer a part of the family traditions. But most of all, I want to remind you that mantra that I share with my family on a regular basis, that it is always easy to love someone when they are behaving well. The challenge is to find ways to love each other when we're not in our best behavior, and to carry them in our heart all the same. I wish you all a safe and happy holiday. I look forward to speaking to you again next Tuesday. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett.